CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business. CityTalk 105.9.
Good morning and welcome to City Talk's Business with Frank McKenna. Frank is the chairman of Downtown in Business, recognised as the region's leading lobby group and business membership organisation. My name's Roger Jonas, I'm the events manager for Downtown in Business, and I'll be standing in for Frank this morning as he is decorating his bathroom. And for a man who doesn't know the difference between a hammer and a screwdriver, if you believe that, you'll believe anything. Well, I guess the first thing is to wish you all a happy new decade. It seems like only yesterday that we were all panicking about computers crashing and planes falling out of the sky as we hit the new century. Today, we're going to focus on the art in on art in business. I'm joined in the studio by a local artist with an international reputation, Mr. Stephen Collett. And also joining us is Jane Moore. Jane is the Director of Agent Marketing, who offer a full-service marketing consultancy in Liverpool. And we're going to be looking at some of Agent's current projects in the city, as well as a whole host of other subjects. Welcome to you both.
Oh, thank you, Roger.
Thank you very much.
All right, we've got that out of the way, and I've managed to take the mickey out of Frank McKenna, which is my want.
Genius.
Yeah. Stephen, I'm going to come to you first. This thing about you being a professional artist, how long have you... I knew Stephen, by the way, many, many years ago in another life, when he used to work in a bar...
Yeah, we've got to start somewhere, haven't we, Roger?
Absolutely, absolutely. But I never knew at the time that you were a professional artist. How did all this start?
Well, I wasn't necessarily professional or full-time at the time. But a couple of years after that, I just kind of went into it. I trained as an architect. And shortly after that, I decided that architecture really wasn't the way for me. So I decided that, you know, art
why,
was.
Why is that? Well, I mean, architecture is obviously an amazing skill which takes an awful long time
to learn. It's a very good thing to start with. I mean, the basics they teach you when you're doing your architecture degree, you know, are fantastic. You learn all sorts of different, you know, trades and, you know, sort of aspects of the job. But it was the art aspect that really got me. I mean, I was more concerned with what paintings to put on the walls in particular rooms and sort of interior design. And that aspect rather than, you know, the kind of structural aspect of it. Yeah. And my heart just wasn't in it. You know, art was the way forward for me. I've been painting since I was about 4 years old, something like that. You know,
as Frank is today doing the bathroom.
Indeed, yes. Yeah, well, I think that's probably where I started, actually. You know, bathroom walls or whatever. Yeah, my parents with wax crayons loved it, you know. But no, that's, you know, essentially where I started. And one day I just thought, well, I'll just give this a stab, you know. I'm young, why not?
But it seems such an insecure career to pursue, you know. I mean, I think it's like being an author, you know. Everyone's got a book in them, haven't they? I can't draw for toffee, although I was a scenic artist in the theatre, so I can do big scale. But you give me an A4 sheet of paper, and I'm completely lost. So you know, it's such an unpredictable industry, I guess. You're either going to make it or you're not.
Well, yeah, you are right. I mean, when I first started, I wasn't doing it full time. It wasn't my major source of income. Obviously, I was working in the bar. but no, I mean, after a while, it just started to pay for itself. And that's when I turned professional. And that was about 4.5, 5 years ago now.
Wow.
And that's when it started paying its own way. And that's when I started making, what I would call a living out of it. Mm. So, and it's just got better ever since, really.
So I said in the introduction that you're a local artist with an international reputation.
And that's very generous, yeah. Thank you, Roger.
Well, no, you know, I mean, I've read your bio. I know as much as I'm going to know from paper reading about you. And it seemed, you know, it's pretty impressive the relationship that you have with the likes of New York, where you've exhibited.
Yeah, well, that was, I mean, I was very lucky to get a show there. And I'm very lucky with the relationship I now have with my New York gallery. I mean, they have me back once a year, and I've had some great results, some great sales, great reviews, and yeah, I'm fortunate.
Let's just look at this. Your second exhibition was called Sky, and it apparently it was so successful that it was sent over to the Jadite Gallery?
The Jadite Gallery in New York,
In New York in December 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that exhibition achieved huge viewing figures, and that you put down to a review in the New York Times that said, "This young British artist is one of the most promising artists of his generation and our time."
That's correct, yeah.
Justify that, Collett. Come on. I mean, awesome, isn't it?
Heavens, I don't know. I mean, I'm not even sure which guy the critic was, you know, but, you know, I must have impressed him. What can I say? I mean, you know, sometimes you can just be very fortunate, and I think that's why they've had me back, you know. People seem to like the work, and that's one way in which I'm very lucky. I seem to paint what people like and certainly what reviewers like. It's not always the case, though. I've got my fair share of not so great reviews, you know. But
What about your fair share of bad paintings as well? I mean, I'm sure that...
Well, one in three, I think, never gets shown to the public, at least. That's probably a bit, you know, probably more like one in two doesn't get shown to the public. So when you think, for every painting you see on a wall, I've been slugging away for an equal amount of time on a piece that didn't see the light of day.
And what would you say is your... Do you have a style? Are you adaptable? Are you versatile as an artist?
Well, I used to say I paint what people pay me to paint.
So you're commercial.
So I'm commercial. No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I've got several different styles I use. I've got a very impressionistic style I can paint in. I've got a very architectural style, which I paint in. Some of my pop art work I sort of do for people. It's a bit more commercial. I don't really enjoy doing it, but...
It tends to pay the bills.
My work has been likened to... Oh, God, I say this now. People like Cezanne.
Come on, sell yourself.
The Impressionists, basically.
Susan.
What?
Susan. Compared to Susan.
Susan?
Did you say compared to Susan?
I said Cezanne.
I'm sorry.
Not Susan.
Listen, I'm being sort of deliberately skeptical and evasive here. I look back at... I mean, I did art at school. And I was pretty appalling when one of my pictures was hung next to one of the guys who really knew what he was doing. And I think, you know, I have favourite artists. I like Rousseau. Mm-hmm. I like Monet.
Monet's about as close to Cezanne as you're going to get. It's impressionistic work.
Right.
But it's done in a very kind of modern way.
I mean, art does have its skeptics, doesn't it?
Of course it does. Skeptics, yeah, definitely. A lot of people think, you know, it's... I mean, there's a lot of people probably couldn't really tell the difference between, say, a painting worth £150 and a painting worth £15,000. You know, it's... And basically, the difference really is the artist.
Okay, so you're buying the artist, not necessarily
You're buying a name or a name linked to a painting, and that's when, you know, art has its value, because art has no real intrinsic value as such. You know, when you take the value of the oil painting, you know, the oil paints and the actual canvas, you know, it's very little to actually, you know, put together a painting in comparison to what you sell the painting for. But the reputation you earn over time, the reviews you get, the shows you get, that all adds to your name. And you know, it soon builds up, and something I've had to, you know, establish myself.
So, again, coming back to this skeptical thing, I mean, what's that artist named Tracy Emin?
Tracy Emin, one of my personal favourites.
I don't get it. I just don't get it.
I don't think you really are supposed to. I think the fact that you don't get it means that she's obviously, you know.
But why does she command such a high price for her artwork? And I use that term loosely, and I know there are going to be people who are listening to this who will be wanting to come and punch me now. And what's the point
of
it?
She charges that much because she can.
Yeah.
And people pay it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Are people stupid?
But isn't that the power of a brand? That's ultimately what she's become.
Of course it is.
I guess so. But
when you look at the likes of Damien Hirst, I mean, he's, you know, some of his work, I think to myself, heavens, you know, dots, you know, on canvases.
Yeah.
But he did it, so therefore, you know, people pay a premium for it.
Same as Banksy. Graffiti as
well. Oh, no, come on, Banksy is awesome.
Actually, like Banksy, I've got a lot of respect for Banksy.
But genius. Back in the day, it was graffiti.
Yeah.
You know, and when he was an unknown brand, it was graffiti.
We're kind of getting into another realm of art here. What's graffiti
art? What's vandalism, what's art,
but
what's...
I mean, we're specifically, if you like, talking about art in business.
Absolutely.
Banksy, for God's sake, he created this amazing graffiti, which now, I mean, it goes for thousands and thousands and thousands. And when he's dead, well, imagine what it's going to be like then.
Goodness.
It's incredible.
But he's created that brand, he's perpetuated that brand by never being seen in public, never being interviewed. So he's been very much, nobody knows what he looks like.
I was going to say, does anybody actually
know?
No.
There's been a lot of speculation about who Banksy really is, and no one really knows.
He took over the Museum of...
Imagine if the Stig hadn't come out. Banksy could have been the Stig, couldn't he?
That would be a good twist, definitely.
Okay. But no, overnight he took over Bristol Museum and completely recreated the exhibitions within the museum. And they opened up one day and didn't announce it. It was just a huge runaway success.
Wow.
Because of the power of his brand. Anybody else did what he was doing, nobody would have really batted an eyelid. But it's Banksy.
Incredible. I still don't and never will get Tracy Emin, though. I never will get it, and you'll never convince me. Just move on a little bit. I know that we've got three pieces of your artwork hanging up in our office.
You have indeed, yeah.
Also, just prior to Christmas, we held a dinner where we revealed a painting that you have done, a portrait. And it's quite a sizable canvas. It would have to be to take the whole of his head. But it was a canvas of Frank McKenna.
Yeah.
And we had a dinner over at the Malmaison, which was fantastic. Your artwork was concealed under a silken cloth.
This is true.
We love the drama.
I'm not trying to build this up to anything. This is actually what happened.
This is productivist.
None of us saw the painting until Stephen revealed all. Including Frank himself, and Frank didn't even sit for it, did he? From an image.
Well, I couldn't. Yeah, I had to do it in absolute secrecy because of that. So I had to work from images and photographs that he sent me. Yeah. So,
and there was a sense of anticipation, and I'm not one to take the Mickey ever out of anybody.
Of course not.
But I mean, I was ready to really rip the back out of Frank, and as again we do quite often. So there was an air of anticipation amongst the dinner guests, probably about 12, 15 people there. And the time came to reveal, and the room fell silent because not because it was an image of Frank and everybody was in awe of his greatness. It was because it was an absolutely bloody fantastic portrait. And it genuinely was. And I didn't know what to expect. I really didn't know what to expect.
Has he got it hanging over his bed?
It's in the office. And I'm hoping it's going to stay there. Frank normally would have it over his bed, I guess, or on the ceiling, so that when he wakes up first thing in the morning, he can see himself. But he's got a mirror-lined bedroom anyway, apparently.
Allegedly.
But yeah, it truly is a great piece of artwork.
And, thank you very much.
You know, as I say, when I compare that against the other three pieces of art that we have in the office, one is a very surreal nude, I think, in blue. Was that you were going through your blue period?
I was going for a blue phase.
Yeah.
And one nude phase as well, actually.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think we've got a nude, haven't we?
She's not quite nude.
Semi-nude. But the one that really stands out for me is, and again, incredible when you know the story behind it, is a picture of Richard Branson.
Yeah.
Painted by...
Oh.
You used...
Oh, I used a credit card for that one, yeah.
A credit card,
yeah,
okay?
It's a long story. I can shorten it.
A tool...
I actually used, because you know you can use a palette knife. I used a credit card instead.
Fantastic.
It was, it's all done by the swiping action of a credit card.
Love
and
it.
it's kind of, I don't know, up close it looks a bit strange, and from a distance it looks...
Oh, I don't know so much. I mean, it's a painting that I've fallen in love with, and when you know that it's the creativity that's gone behind it's absolutely fantastic. So we've identified that you can make Frank look good on canvas. We've identified that you can use different mediums. You can use a credit card as opposed to a palette knife. You've also managed successfully to achieve some sponsorship, some grant sponsorship, I believe.
I have indeed,
Just tell us a little bit about that so that I'm not... I know you've involved the Chamber of Commerce and who else? Tell me a little bit about this grant that you've achieved.
Well, it's not specifically related directly to my art, but with my paintings and everything, it occurred to me after a while that I've got to think of my business as a business. My art has to be a business. So
absolutely.
Instead of applying for Arts Council grants or anything like that, which, let's face it, you know, there are hundreds of artists out there trying to get that stuff, largely unsuccessful because there's so very little money available, I started applying for business funding for different things. To try and sort of, try a complete cross-section of different things I could possibly do with that money. Mm. And one thing that came up was international travel grants with UKTI, UK Trade and Investment. And since I started having exhibitions, globally, it's obviously across the, across the Atlantic and a lot in Europe as well, places like Paris and Berlin, they decided to sponsor me for some research trips and some exhibitions I was doing over there. And, one thing led to another and, they just keep coming back and saying, well, we've got this money. Do you want to go to the Shanghai Expo and do this?
Fantastic.
And do you want to do that? And,
wow.
Yeah, I suppose I just think I tick boxes and I've been quite successful.
I think it's probably a little bit more than ticking boxes. I think again, you're selling yourself short there. And again, I can only say that because I've seen the standard and the quality of the work that you do.
It's promoting the cultural offer of the city.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I take the name of Liverpool wherever I go, and people. Yeah. Obviously, yeah. I know Liverpool, where I go, but certainly, in Shanghai, everyone seemed quite impressed.
But I think when we go back in history, and we'll come on to this in a minute, when we go back in history and you look at artists, we've mentioned a few, Cézanne, Rousseau,
Monet,
Emin. These people are prolific, aren't they? They're recognised worldwide, and I think the potential for Stephen Collett as an artist from Liverpool has that appeal.
Well, back in the day of philanthropy, back in the 1800s, there was it was commonplace to sponsor an artist as a commercial person would.
Yeah.
One of the merchants would take an artist in residence and they would sponsor their work. And that's really a lot how William Brown Street has got such amazing art, because people would give back to the cultural up-and-coming artists of the day. And that's the only way they could survive, because there wasn't council or a UKTI back in the day.
You're quite right. People did that. Mm. And it's not just that. I mean, it was the church, the Vatican did, same sort of thing. All throughout history, people have sponsored artists and, commissioned portraits and things like that. And that leads nicely on to...
I was going to say exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
It's as if you've written the script for us.
Income diversification.
Yeah. There's a project that you've got that Downtown is going to work closely with you, and we're actually really excited about this. A new year, a new decade, a new start. And as I said before, throughout history, the rich and the successful have commissioned paintings of themselves.
Indeed,
celebrating, I suppose, the success and in recognition of their achievements. And you, Stephen Collett, are going to try and reproduce with the support of Downtown.
With the support of Downtown,
a whole project based on the successful, the glitterati, the business, the business individuals who have achieved in Liverpool.
Well, I mean that's the idea. I mean, I came across an idea of doing a series of portraits based on Liverpool's entrepreneurial elite, and I think the idea was it's developed over the last 6 months as to how I wanted to shape it. And I wanted to combine Liverpool's thriving art scene and its thriving business scene. I mean, Liverpool is I've got a lot of respect for other businessmen and other artists in Liverpool as an artist and a businessman from Liverpool. And I wanted to put that together in a big show of local entrepreneurs, celebrating the way they have, made their money or the way they run their business or their brand, just like I did for Frank.
Yeah.
I mean, all throughout history, like you were saying, people have commissioned portraits of themselves to hang behind their wingback chairs, often
Absolutely.
Of them sat in wingback chairs, looking very stately. Yeah. And I want to try and bring that idea a bit more into
why
the 21st
century. Why didn't you
century.
Do Frank at a bar then?
It would have been more suited. I suppose I could have done, but he didn't send me any pictures of him in a bar.
Okay, fair enough.
Paparazzi band.
Yeah, I had to be very careful at what I did for him, because it had to have longevity as well.
I mean, again, I'm taking the mickey, but there is a certain element of seriousness to that portrait. And it really does. It shows Frank off as Frank McKenna is.
Well, it was very well thought about. Yeah, I used the branding of Downtown, the very sort of simple black and white branding. Mm. Used a bit of blue in there, obviously, because he's a bit of a blue, isn't he?
Yes, absolutely. You used it quite a lot of grey as well.
Quite a lot of grey, indeed. Yes, lots of grey. The thing about Frank, I saw Frank, and I read about him a lot, and I saw him everywhere. Obviously, because his face is everywhere. And I tried to encompass Frank as a package into this painting. Mm. And I think that's why people seem to like it so much, because it is Frank. It's even if it was of someone else, it would still be Frank.
Yes. It catches the essence of the man.
Indeed.
And I think in some ways it's really nice, because I like the photograph of that you've used. And I think in some ways it's quite an iconic picture of Frank McKenna. God knows how many photographs have been taken of him, but I think the right one was chosen, because it is quite an iconic picture.
It was crying out to be a portrait.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's very relaxed. It shows him as he is. Let's move on from talking about
Frank. Well, I'd be really interested to know, how are you going to select these entrepreneurs and these ambassadors of our city? How are you going to go about choosing
Who they are? That's just it. We are looking for candidates at the moment, and we've got a couple lined up. But yeah, if someone wants to step
forward, people volunteer themselves.
They would indeed. I mean, or you could have employees or workmates of a particular person coming forward and saying, you know, this is what we want to do. But I mean, what we're going to do is we're going to have this exhibition. We're looking at Business Week this year.
Yeah.
So you know, the summer. So we're going to have to, you know, obviously, you know, do work on it pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I've got a few.
You'll be busy.
Well, I'm always busy. I like being busy. I've constantly got two or three projects on
so
anyway.
Who's your ideal candidate? Describe to us who you want to have as your perfect ambassadors.
To be perfectly honest, any subject will be interesting to me because any history of anyone who's done well in business or anyone that, you know, sort of runs their own company and, you know, sort of figureheads of companies, I think, because people like to know who they're buying from.
Mm.
Like I did Richard Branson, for example. That's one of the reasons why the Virgin brand is so successful because, you know, it's his personal stamp on his own brand. And people, you know, people like to think that they are actually, you know, buying from a person they can trust.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of these corporate, you know, heads of these companies just aren't known to people.
It'd be really interesting to look at the cultural leaders as well because there are such diverse businesses who are
absolutely
arts leaders.
I mean, this can obviously, you know, as many people come forward or
obviously,
as many people we invite, you could have 10, 20, 15, whatever portraits. The important thing is, I think now that we need to get our finger out and start to talk to people about this. So that actually during Business Week, there is a significant exhibition that will happen in a significant venue in the city that exposes Stephen as a credible international artist and also provides a wall of business leaders all and I think what the idea is, correct me if I'm wrong here, is that, you know, they're not all going to be the same as the Frank McKenna portrait.
Not at all.
The Richard Branson portrait.
Every painting will be done in a way that befits that person. Or, you know, that's quite appropriate to them. I will find an aspect of their character or of their business.
How will you do that?
I'll talk to them, research their history. It's essentially just talking to them and finding out about them and, you know, working from them, really. I mean, I couldn't possibly, you know, without actually meeting someone, without actually, you know, sort of knowing. It's a very personal thing because it's not just for the exhibition. They've got to have this portrait afterwards.
Yeah.
It's going to be theirs.
Wow, that's an amazing opportunity.
Isn't it, I mean, if you're listening out
I'm listening
there,
a list
and,
of names
and you're
to
wanting to get involved with this, you can drop me an email. My address is on the Downtown website. It's roger.jonas@downtowninbusiness. I mean, if there is anybody there who, and please don't see this as being, you know, a vanity thing. It's far from that, isn't it?
It's not egotistical or anything. That's not why I came up with the idea. It's more to do with a celebration of kind of Liverpool and the business within Liverpool. And it's a celebration of people's life experiences, really. Because obviously you get a portrait, we're going to feature, we're going to have a magazine, you know, made up of every portrait that's in it and a bit of a story about that person. And we're going to distribute this, and it will be a celebration of people's success.
Mm.
And not just their success, but sort of the general Liverpool success. And to say, well, we can go toe-to-toe with, you know, with, I don't know, perhaps not London just yet, but we are, you know, we're definitely one of the biggest, most thriving economic hubs, you know, certainly definitely in the north of England. So we're, you know, we're very proud of Liverpool, and this is me showing that.
I just think it's great that we've got a local artist who has come up with an initiative that actually, you know, is very very insular in terms of being for Liverpool business people.
The thing that excites me more about it is that he's doing it for himself. He's not relying on funding or handouts.
Yeah.
You know, it's that enterprising spirit that's really exciting about it, because actually, you know, you could quite easily sit back and wait for Arts Council funding to tell you whether or not you could do something.
I could wait 10 years for that.
And never get it. But,
well,
you know,
let's face it, there's no money available.
And that's
so
the thing with the current climate we're in. You have to get out and do it for yourself.
Yeah.
And it's really exciting.
You have to just do your own thing. You have to diversify. You have to sort of, you know, because obviously there are areas I've had to move out of recently because, you know, certain areas of funding have dried up. But no, I mean, I've always got something that I'm going for. I've always got ideas that I want to pursue. I mean, 9 out of 10 ideas I have never materialised, but it's that one that does that's important to me. And it's that one that does that, you know, that I'll actually go and get known for.
And isn't that very much what big society is all about, though, isn't it? It's about not sitting back and waiting for it to happen for you. It's about going out and making it happen.
Well, I used to do that, but most
I think that's another debate in some ways, because I think Liverpool is an exception to that, because I don't think that many people do sit back and wait. I think they do tend to get off their backsides and do things. So I get, but I think that's another debate for another day.
Sure.
It's that get up and go spirit, I think, in Liverpool that I want to encapsulate in the exhibition. But you are right. A lot of artists will sit back and just wait to be discovered. Hmm. I mean, I tried that for about 6 months, realised I wasn't going to get discovered. who's going to discover you sat in your own studio, painting? Hmm. I mean, you might do an amazing painting without the backer, without people knowing who the artist is.
I guess the same can be said about business in general. If you sit behind a desk, then and ultimately, if you're not out there shaking hands, go into the best networking events in the city.
Or having a portrait done of yourself.
Absolutely. Or having, okay, I want to move on because there's another element to what you do, which actually, as an artist, I'm quite surprised that you have the financial ability to do this. You've done a fair amount of charity work where your paintings have gone under the hammer.
Yeah, I like to do my bit, basically. I do a lot of charity work. A lot of paintings that I've done, I don't know. I mean, sometimes I just think, because obviously I can't give away a lot of money because with being an artist, you can't generally designate a certain amount per month because you never know how much money you're going to make. You might make a lot 1 month and nothing for the next 6 months, especially when you're working on a big exhibition where you've got nothing actually for sale within that time. So quite often I give my time to a lot of charities. Mm. I give paintings to be auctioned in the name of charity. I mean, I gave away my city's collection. I was like about 12 paintings I did back in 2008 to celebrate the Capital of Culture year. And I gave that away, March 2009, we did a big charity auction with Dot Art. And that really was a nice thing to do. And we sort of spread the money across a few charities.
Absolutely. And I like the fact that you give your time as well, because sometimes with smaller charities, that's more valuable
than a
cash donation, because you actually can give them... education.
If you give what you can give, then I think that's the way forward. Really, I've no reason why I shouldn't. Anyway,
absolutely.
A lot of the time, I think to myself, I'm painting this, and like I say, every other one doesn't perhaps get exhibited. Mm. So I can always give people something that perhaps that others couldn't.
And sort of finally, as we round up this first half, Collis International,
my business.
That's your core business, or?
Yeah, I mean, it's something me and my partner John Phillis set up to do a number of things. We've set up business hubs, we've set up a few art gallery spaces, we've set up a small printing company that we operate between us. We've set up quite a few sort of separate little businesses to sort of support other artists.
Wow.
So we have gallery.
Income better and better and better. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I've.
Are you a social enterprise? Or are you a business?
Oh, we're a limited company. Yeah. Limited. I'm a sole trader as an artist, but I've also got this other company, and I've got the print company as well. I've got a few bits and pieces.
Because it sounds very much like an ethical stance.
Well, no, I mean, I just noticed there are a few holes in the needs for artists in the city, and I just filled them. Really,
brilliant.
No, I don't sleep a lot. I work quite hard. I mean,
it's a shame that it's really hard to talk about art on radio because you're desperate to hold something up and see it. So I think the point is watch this space kind of because
post some pictures upon your Facebook.
Well, this is what I'm saying about Business Week during May, June, I think. June, July, I can't remember. I don't have the downtown calendar here in front of me.
It's on the calendar.
But it will be on the downtown calendar. And as I say, with our support, I'm hoping that we can work together on this, find the right people pretty soon, which is why it's important that either if you want to suggest somebody that we can approach or if you want to put yourself forward to have your portrait painted... we're looking to mount an exhibition, as I say, during Business Week. If it doesn't happen I think we've got to be very sort of broad here, not commit ourselves absolutely to Business Week, but it would be nice if we could achieve this by then, because there's a nice significance there between the two. So get in touch with us. You can drop us a line at Downtown. If you go onto the website and go onto the people page, my email is there, and I'd love to hear from you. We will then put you in touch with Stephen, and we can take it from there. I think it's very exciting. I think it's a great initiative. this is from a guy who has, as we've said before, an international reputation. I've seen his artwork. I'm massively, massively impressed by his skill and his talent and his ability to produce art of a different genre, I suppose. Very exciting for Stephen, very exciting for Downtown. Watch this space. Thanks for joining us. You're going to stay with us, and we'll be back straight after this.
Downtown Liverpool in business. City Talk 105.9.
Well, welcome back. I'm joined in the studio with Stephen Collett, international artist extraordinaire, and the director of agent marketing, Jane Moore. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Agent marketing. Oh. I think, first of all, I mean, there are PR companies, there are marketing agencies coming out of the woodwork.
Indeed. Who'd have thought it 10 years ago?
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And yeah. Actually, do you know what? It recognises the fact that Liverpool can stand it, doesn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit about goodness. Agent marketing.
Well, I returned from London in 2002 on the crest of a wave of seeing all the cranes going up. And could see the opportunity, having lived in London, having lived in Birmingham, seeing the regeneration that Birmingham specifically had gone through. And I could sense the change was coming here too. Timed it beautifully to very shortly after to be diagnosed with cancer and took a whole stock of where I wanted to go in life. At the time, I was working in radio and working with my now business partner, Wayne Malcolm. And during my treatment, I met Paul Corcoran, who many people will know from the Liverpool scene, as a very exuberant, excitable, fabulously talented young man. And I suppose we all came at the idea of running a marketing business from very different points. I'd previously been an editor of magazines, both in the Midlands and in London, working both in regional and national titles, and could see there was an opportunity to create something which was a little PR agency. And Paul very firmly put me in my place and said there was so much more to communications than just PR. And we created a full service agency, which really we started off just delivering marketing strategy, which was finding evidence for why companies should do what they do. Because Wayne, who'd been a large scale event manager for Millennium Events around Bristol and around the UK and around Europe, had wasted so much money on marketing. And it is a bit of a dark art. Marketing agencies can tend to put sort of smoke and mirrors in and these fabulous PowerPoints that really have no great substance or evidence to them. So we set about our own strategy, first of all, and we spent 3 months with an S. McVeigh's building in Seymour Street developing how we were going to create an agency that would be a great place to work as a first and foremost.
Esther McVeigh being the gorgeous.
Oh, the fabulous
the
Esther
gorgeous,
McVeigh.
Gorgeous.
So she gave us our
MP
first
for Wirral West.
Space, indeed. And in an incubator space, we created our own kind of plan for how we would attack the market. And Paul shames me every time. I remember saying, just give me a business card with my name and number on it, and I'll go and get some business. And he firmly put me on the straight and narrow and said, no, we have a strategy for how we go about deciding who our referral network will be and how we approach them and what we say to them. And from that, it really gave us a great foundation. And we started with the three of us. Very shortly afterwards, we grew and we outgrew Seymour Terrace. We moved to Parr Street, then to the Blue Coat, and now we have a team of 12 based in Argyle Street.
And can I really put you on the spot here? Which, you know, if I was engaging
you've
with a marketing agency...
You've put me on the spot
agency,
just by being here, what
I
do
know,
you mean?
I know, but, you know, what differentiates you? What's your USP?
I think it's the culture we've created of real integrity and people who really love what they do. And you can't really...
That's something that's actually on your website, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and we don't... One of the things we do differently is we don't wear our clients as badges of honour. Mm. You know, people buy into agent marketing because they want to work with agent marketing, not because of who else we work with. And that, I think, is the main thing that we've always been quite consistent. We discussed it yesterday. We're currently going through our second marketing strategy and review because we've grown and we've got much bigger clients now, much more diverse client portfolio from public, private and third sector. And we're being asked to go and work for massive projects that actually sometimes are kind of quite quirky sense of humour in our documents and proposals isn't always appropriate for. We've always been a little bit irreverent and just occasionally it kind of bites us. And you know, we're not a company who will always necessarily win a tender because we're not vanilla flavoured and we tend to come at things very differently. So we're kind of just updating all of our approaches to what we do and how we communicate now in line with our current target
market. Do you think that has been a mistake in the past?
No, not at all. We've probably turned away more business than we've took on over the 4 years, but it's proved us to be right. Because the business that you change, if you change shape as a business, whether you're an artist or, like you were saying about the work that you, the commissions that you have to do, you don't really enjoy, we would just rather not do that. And there's been projects where we knew we'd get it and we were being asked to deliver work and we maybe 100 grand to the project and it was, the project itself was flawed. Mm. So if we'd have took it on and the agency who took it on are no longer in business because it was fatally flawed. So you couldn't achieve the objectives of it because no amount of money would achieve
it. You talk about achieving objectives. I mean, I think that's key to any business who engages with a marketing consultancy.
Know what you want to achieve, absolutely.
It's not just knowing what you want to achieve. I'm shelling out an absolute fortune to a PR and marketing company. I want to know, I want those results measured, proved.
Yeah.
I want
evaluated,
you to come back to
transparent.
Me and tell me
how
you've achieved and what you've achieved.
Absolutely.
How do you do that?
Well, it's all about the process. And I think the process that we take people through, a lot of marketing companies who do strategy will do a strategy to a business. Hmm. So they'll have a couple of meetings and they'll go in, they'll write it and they'll come back and it's presented as a finished product.
Yeah.
We take clients into our boardroom, covered under the stairs, and it's a huge boardroom now, where we completely hothouse them for 2 or 3 days and we get their team involved. We get literally sleeves rolled up and we deconstruct where they are right now in order to get them fit for purpose for where they need to be. And it is about kind of, we do a lot of work with social enterprises who've had to diversify their income streams because of the funding cuts. And it's about being very strategic in their objectives for that. And making sure that they are fit for the future. So there's a lot of future-proofing goes on.
Hmm.
But really just getting people on board. And the main thing that we've always been really keen on is making sure that they're sustainable.
Hmm.
You know, there's no point in constantly just having to pay fortunes for consultants like us to come in and do it, when actually we train their team to deliver what we do along the way. So a lot of knowledge transfer goes on. And people think we're mad.
Is that not shooting yourself in the foot?
Absolutely. Yeah. But you know what? A client who understands what we do and how to do it values it.
Do you get much repeat business from...
Constant.
Yeah.
I think one of our first strategy clients is still with us now on a regular PR. And we've developed a service called Critical Friend, which was born out of the fact that we were being drawn into lots of different elements of their business that we couldn't tangibilise and couldn't charge for. But we were over-delivering because actually... if a client needs support, we'll give them support.
Mm.
And at the end of the day, we packaged it because it's another service offering. It could be that we're doing a feasibility or we're helping them find new premises and we'll help kick the doors in and find the spaces and do the research for them and even go on viewings to support them. Because being a sole trader or being a small business is very lonely for a leader in a business. So actually, when we kind of joke about it and say that we give people a pair of agent marketing superhero pants that they wear over their trousers, anytime they need them, they can pull them out. And that's pretty much what it's like. You know, you just, you do roll up your sleeves and get stuck in any kind of element. And the things we get involved in is quite diverse.
We can see that.
The advice that we give is based on evidence. So, sometimes we find ourselves in a creative pitch and we start pitching these fantastic ideas, but we stop and say, well, let's just evaluate whether that actually is doable. And find the evidence to support why it's a good idea before we go ahead and spend thousands of pounds on parties that mean nothing. Mm. You know, it's not the way.
Yeah.
And I think in these austere times, people want more evidence base because I was reading on LinkedIn yesterday about this. So some poor guy's gone to war with Yale.com because he spent $8,000 with them and he feels ripped off. And ultimately, a marketing mix is a marketing mix. But the question I posed to him is, did you know what your target audience was and what they wanted to hear? Because no matter how much you spend, if you don't know, firstly, who you're talking to, and secondly, what they want to hear and how they want to hear it, you're wasting that money. So, and that's for me from many years ago, selling advertising for years. And that's the first objection you always get is, well, did it work? Well, 50% of advertising works, 50% doesn't, but you try and find the one that doesn't is the standard response for an advertising sales rep.
I think it's amazing how also people's marketing budgets change from
Completely.
One year to another.
And how the market's changed.
Absolutely. But you look, I mean, we This year, we're probably not going to do as much advertising in terms of the imagery that we use.
Thank God for that. I do love those adverts, Roger.
Hey, they're
iconic. You know I'm a big fan of you.
They're iconic.
Girls.
Downtown in business adverts have become iconic. And we know that because people tell us.
Absolutely, because we spend all day laughing at them. That's why.
But anyway, moving swiftly on, we noticed that the likes of like DQ magazine, GQ magazine, during the early part of the recession, was such a thin publication. Whereas usually it would, you know, so it suggested to us, and when you flick through it, you realise why, and it was the lack of advertising.
Yeah. And there seems to be a bit of a return to people's confidence in spending in the last 3 months. I think in times of recession, we've seen nothing of a slowdown. If anything, we've increased by about 50% of our turnover this year, which is ridiculous.
Wow.
And we keep checking ourselves and kind of going, are we doing something wrong? Are we missing
something?
We've
got the wrong accountant.
Yeah, is something wrong?
The calculator button stuck.
Right. But I think it's down to the fact that it's choosing the right business to take on.
Yeah.
Making sure that, you know, we're not risk averse, but we're sensible about the kind of clients we take on. I think as well, it's important to work with people that you're really passionate about.
Yeah.
Because if you can't believe in their project, no matter what you, how good you are, you can't deliver as good a service as if you really love what you do. And we've done some crazy things, you know, pop-up kitchens in Bold Street and, you know, all kinds of mad tactics for clients. But it's all been on very much on a line for their campaigns. It's very much to achieve the objectives of raising perception for them.
I know that one of the projects that you're working on at the moment, which has been a tremendous success for Agent, is the Albert Dock.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit how that came about, what the remit was.
We worked with the Albert Dock in 2007-2008, and in 2009 it was decided that they'd achieved their objectives, and they thanked us and off we went, and they didn't work with us for another year. And then early last year we got a call to come back in and pitch. We partnered with another agency on that one, with Rachel Bampton Smith, who's a tourism and leisure destination specialist. And she's very good at kind of bringing the strategy into alignment. And probably is the only other strategy agency that we'd work with, because she does really know her stuff. And so we set about pulling together a tactical campaign, which involved destination marketing, using PR as a tool to do that, and also some leafleting through the sort of tourism outlets. And in the last 12 months, they've seen an increase of 10% on their visitor figures. You know, they're seeing really solid successes. And that's in a year when the arena saw a fall in visitor numbers. So you can kind of think that sometimes the arena will bolster everything that's out of town. But the arena has actually seen a lower number of events that bring people down. And really just, you know, 5 million people a year are still going down and showing love for the Albert Dock. It's wonderful. It's an iconic piece of our city. Absolutely.
I get it. That was really art, really creative. Like, you know, showing love for the Albert Dock.
Yeah. And it's you know, some of the things that we've done there very tactically about, they don't have a huge marketing budget. So what we had to do is partner them with citywide events to make them part of the bigger noise. So we did Matthew Street Stage down there, which was funded by the Albert Dock Tenants Business Association. The John Lennon projection, where we lit up the building with the...
I saw that.
It's an image of John Lennon that had never been seen before. Mm. We found Bill Zygmunt, who is the Fleet Street photographer in London back in the day, who became mates with John. Mm. He gave us his image to use free of charge. He got beamed all around the world, bless him. But that was a citywide event with the Peace Monument being unveiled. Mm. And we linked to that to maximise the exposure for the Albert Dock. And I think the press coverage they've had has been phenomenal. You know, well over about £1.5 million this year of press coverage they've had.
I mean, when it comes to marketing this city, you know, and I know that, you know, downtown are involved in delivering the embassy down in London, which is very much focused on investment and wealth. Mm. And we've kind of not gone down the route of the Beatles. But actually, you know, when you think about tourism, when you think about what the group have done, what the football teams have done for the city, you know,
they're assets.
Massive
most
assets.
Most definite assets.
Massive assets. And need to be used and abused, I guess.
It's about developing the brand strands, really. It's that cultural and leisure to offer. There's the sport offer. There's the knowledge offer. It's about each of those different strands of our city's brand has to have its key messages and its key communication channels. Because actually those audiences, like we've done quite a lot for the football with the Albert Dock, with the Norwegian Football Supporters Association, where we've done offers for their fans. They come to the city, they're spending money here, and it's about tapping into that market for, you know, a venue within the city.
And I guess with the Albert Dock as well, we shouldn't forget that the in April, May, there's the boat show.
Oh, my goodness,
you know,
how
that,
excited.
That is incredible for Liverpool.
But also there's a huge amount of investment that the Albert Dock Limited have put into the pontoons. It's a real partnership approach down there. It's been phenomenal.
I think it's recently it's £1 million worth of investment in terms of pontoons, which can be a permanent fixture.
And
you imagine that the waterfront project, when that helped, Wirral Waterfront, the Peel project?
But it's been an ongoing project for, I'd say, 5-6 years now, because there's been the Waterfront Connections Partnership, which is now the Waterfront Project, is very much been strategically positioned itself to upgrade the infrastructure. You know, you see we get complaints sometimes from local people who complain about the roadworks and the cobbles being up and things. But actually the only way they can do the illuminated signposts and the wayfinding scheme is by disrupting some of the great.
I think when you live in a city that Liverpool is one of the core cities in the UK. You have to expect to progress that disruption is going to happen. The big dig, that was a nightmare.
I've lived through 3 big digs in my time. Birmingham, Preston and Liverpool, goodness. Well, every time I move somewhere, it seems to get dug up. Maybe it's something I do. But
you're the kiss of life.
The kiss of cranes, yes, the kiss of cranes.
But I think that's the key thing, isn't it? You know, I mean, you're proud of a city. You've got to be a little bit tolerant about the upheaval.
Absolutely. But I think change is growth, isn't it? And I think the city's gone through massive infrastructure change. But I think without all of that, we wouldn't be in the position we're in now, where we're looking prosperously towards 2011. I certainly don't hear as much doom and gloom as the papers seem to have.
But there isn't. We've talked about this quite a few times on this. The national. We've probably got a better reputation in Europe. I think we said this in the programme just before Christmas. We've probably got a better reputation in Europe than we have in London.
I've noticed that when I've been away. I'm in Europe, I always say, I'm from Liverpool. Hey, say Liverpool.
I'm just working on something now. We're working with the biggest retailer out in Liverpool One, so the new home quarter, and we're just doing a whole lot of fam trips to bring the press up to Liverpool to really let them experience Liverpool firsthand. And yes, it's about demonstrating and showcasing that amazing retail outlet, but it's more about really getting them to embrace Liverpool.
Well, this is the whole idea of the embassy down in London over the next 3 months from I think January the 21st. You know, it's about encouraging investors into the city, but it's about also bringing people to the city who are obviously high net worth individuals who, like the likes of Grosvenor, can have the faith in the city. And what a city. A fantastic city.
Absolutely.
Fastest growing city, it has to be, in the UK.
And there's a real appetite for culture out there, you know.
And I think that's why you're here, you know, international artist Stephen Collett, marketing consultant extraordinaire, both with a passion for the city, both who've done an awful lot for the city. I think a new decade, and it's kind of watch this space, probably the best things are still to come. We're at the end, unfortunately. I could sit here all day.
Oh, I could go on for days.
Yeah,
right?
I've got
a Sunday roast to go back to, so hard luck. Thank you, Stephen Collett.
No problem.
And thank you to Jane as well, Jane Moore from Agent Marketing.
Thanks for inviting me.
That's it. And don't do anything Frank wouldn't do, apparently, including decorating. Take care.
Downtown Liverpool in business. City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9. Official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm.